Okay. First of all, good evening. And thank you so much to everyone who is here and those who will be listening later for joining us tonight. I want to share a very special thank you to our esteemed Rabbanim, board members, fellow members of the Adult Education Committee, past and present, our devoted Shul administrative team, and fellow members of B'nai Ashurim and the wider community for your supportive roles and interest in our adult ed programming. A few words by way of introduction for our very special speaker tonight. Rabbi Moshe Shulman is the spiritual leader at the Young Israel of St. Louis and founding dean of Yeshivat Kadima High School. He has also served as interim head of school at the Epstein Hebrew Academy in St. Louis. Rabbi Shulman has taught formal and informal Jewish education in the U.S. and in Israel, and has his smicha from the Jerusalem Chief Rabbinate, as well as degrees in education and computer software engineering. He has studied under some of our most preeminent Torah scholars, including Nechama Leibowitz, Zichrona Levracha. He is also a Moel, trained by the Chief Moel of Jerusalem. Rabbi Shulman is a member of the St. Louis Rabbinical Council, the RCA, and the Chicago Rabbinical Council. He is also a proud husband, father, and grandfather, Baruch Hashem. Tonight's topic is a fascinating one that raises some very thought-provoking questions. First, I am always intrigued when people are drawn to biblical characters with whom they share a name. But seriously, this topic addresses the unknown from within a very well-known story in the Torah, namely Moshe as the king of Ethiopia, the missing years. There will be some time allocated at the end for questions. And without further ado, please let us warmly welcome Rabbi Moshe Shulman. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the introduction, appreciate the words of welcome and description of the bio. It sounds more impressive than it really is, so thank you. It's an honor to be here. I have been in the show many times, visiting family in Teaneck, and usually I just kind of come to Minyan and sit off on the side and sort of happy with the anonymity of being on vacation. So I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to share with you some thoughts and Dvar Torah and Shir in the context of this week's parasha. So to get right to it, the question that I want to address is a little bit misleading. It's not so much about what happened to Moshe in Ethiopia, although we will touch on that and the famous story in the Midrash and its authenticity. But really it's an address to the question of the gap in Moshe's life. There is clearly a gap in the story of the years of Moshe. We know much about him in the early years, and we know much about him in the later years. The middle part of Moshe's life is a mystery. And it's that mystery that I want to try to shed light on and to see if we can't explore through the text a little bit of understanding where the mystery comes from and how we can possibly understand it in different ways. So to start basically from the text itself, the real subject of the Shir is Parsha Shavuot. The beginning of this week's Parsha starts with two very strange chapters. And so in the source pages that you have in front of you, I will try to summarize. I'm not going to read it all, but we'll kind of summarize the key pieces. But essentially, you have almost two introductions to Moshe and the mission mandate of Moshe's job to go to Egypt. In Perek Dalet, which is last week's parasha, in Parashat Shemot, we find that Moshe at the snare, and he's finally appointed and designated to go to Mitzrayim, are certain elements of this mission that God defines for him. At the very end of Perek Dalet, which is the end of the speech and the end of the conversation that Moshe has with God, God finally gets angry and he says to him, "You're going? Hallo, Aaron, Achicha, yet Halevi Yadatiki Daber Daber. Moshe was complaining that he can't speak and he can't effectively communicate to Mitzrayim. And so God says to him, take Aaron with you, and you will speak the things that I will tell you, and I will be with you, I will be with your mouth. And in Pasuk Tet Zayin, V'diberu lecha l'am, you will heal, Aaron will be your spokesperson to the people. V'yeh lecha l'feh, he'll be your mouth. V'yatati lo l'alim, and you will be his leader, his authority, his messenger, his authority. V'etamateh zetikach b'yadecha, take this staff with you, with which you will perform all of the miracles. Similarly, in the same parak, God says to Moshe, I'm in the top box, the right-hand side, B'lech b'chalo shu mitzrayma, v'ei kolam oftim, see all the miracles and the wonders that I have placed before you and I have given into your hands to perform before Paro, v'aniach hazek et libo, I will harden his heart, and he won't let the people leave. And then you will say to Paro, etc., B'ni b'chorim, my firstborn Israel, and the mission will start. So if we look at a summary of the elements that God gives to Moshe at the end of the conversation at the burning bush, there is the appointment to be the leader to go to Mitzrayim. There is the appointment of Aaron as his spokesperson. There is the reference to the hardening of Paro's heart. There is a reference to the signs and the wonders, the otot and the muftim, and the mateh, the staff, which he should take with him. And ultimately, the reference to the firstborn, B'nei B'chori Yisrael. Perek Zayin, three chapters later, in this week's parasha, we have a restart. And God says to Moshe, Re'ei natati netaticha Elohim lefaro, v'aron achicha yenevi'echa. I have made you an authority to Paro, and Aaron will be your spokesperson. Exactly the same reference we had at the bush. You will speak that which I will command you, and Aaron will speak on your behalf. I will harden Paro's heart, and I will expand my wonders and miracles, ototai and moftai, in the land of Egypt. And similarly, reference to Shvatim Gdolim, the great miracles of the plagues. So, these two references, or these two appointments, Moshe seems to be appointed to go to Paro in Perek Dalet, and again in Perek Zion. Moshe is told to take the staff in Perek Dalet, and again in Perek Zion. He's told to take Aaron as his Navi, as his spokesperson, and again he is so told in Perek Zion. So all of the key elements of his mission mandate that we have in Perek Dalet seem to be repeated in Perek Zayin. In between, we have perhaps one of the strangest chapters of all, because we have a description of a repeat of the main messages of the burning bush. In source number one, beneath the box, Perek Vav begins with a description of what we refer to as the Dalad L'shanot HaGu'ula, the famous passage of the four expressions of redemption, in which God says to Moshe, I will take them out of Egypt, Hotzeiti Vitzalti, etc. And Moshe responds and says that Lo Shemua Moshe, Vayedaber Moshe Ken Abnei Yisrael, Lo Shemua Moshe Mikotzu Ruach Me'Avodah Kasha, recognizes that the people aren't listening to him because of the work and the labor and the effort and the toil. And then in the next continuation of the parak, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Bo Daber Al Paro Melech Mitzrayim, V'Shitni Shalachet Bnei Yisrael Mi'Atzo. God again says to Moshe, go and take Israel out of Egypt. And then we have this lengthy description of the lineage of Moshe, which starts with Reuven and then Shimon and then Levi and then all the way down to Moshe. And a repeat again at the end of the parak, Daber Al Paro Melech Mitzrayim, go and speak to Paro. How many times does God have to tell Moshe to go to speak to Paro? So, of course, in this context, famously, Rashi makes the observation that it's a repetition because now we want to include the yichus of Moshe and his family, and because we interrupt the story with the lineage and the description of where Moshe comes from and Amram and Yocheved and the entire story of Shevet Levi, we need to repeat and go back to the message of Moshe's refusal. And the Amal Svataim, I am slow of tongue, I cannot speak, and will close the mouth, and at the end of the day, the people aren't listening to me. And God insists that he goes anyway. And so we have this reference twice. And so at the core of the question that I want to raise this evening is, why is it necessary to appoint Moshe, to send Moshe on this mission twice? In Perek Daleth, and again in Perek Vav Zayin. And in Perek Vav Zayin, we seem to have this constant repetition of the themes of his appointment. Big gadol, the bigger picture, that's the question that I want to try to answer. And what I would like to do with you this evening is look at maybe the, let's call it the classic approach to this question, and then perhaps a more contemporary insight into this dilemma that may shed light on, as we described earlier, the missing years and some other elements to Moshe's story. So let's start with the basic question. How old is Moshe at this point in the story?
80.
80. We all know that Moshe is 80. And that we know because it says so very clearly in the end of the Perek, of the quote from Perek Zayin at the top box on the first page, Moshe ben Shmanim Shana ve'Aaron ben Shalosh Shmanim Shana b'Davram el Paro. Moshe is 80 years old, Aaron is 83 when they speak to Paro. So Moshe is 80 years old at this point in time as he is sent on this mission, although sent and resent on this mission. He is 80 years old. How old is Moshe when he stood before God at the burning bush in Perek Daleth? That's an odd question, because we assume that the time frame between standing at the burning bush and standing before Paro is at most a couple of weeks, a couple of months, maybe. So if he's 80 when he stood before Paro, I assume he's either 79 or 80 when he stood at the burning bush. Depends when his birthday was. But I want to hold that question open and start to explore the story of Moshe's early years. If you look at source 3, I'm going to kind of follow along in the source booklet at this point, so I'll kind of read and summarize and translate as we go. Moshe's story begins. Moshe's story begins when he grows up and goes out to see the suffering of his brothers. And at that point he sees an Egyptian hitting an Israelite, and he stands up for them, and the rest, as we say, is history. First day he smites the Egyptian, and then the next day he encounters two Jews fighting, and then he is realizes that his story is known and his intervention is not secret, and he's forced to flee. So how old is he when it says, Vayi ba'imimehem ba'igdal Moshe ve'etzeh lecha?
40.
That's an interesting question. 40, okay. That is definitely an opinion that he's 40 years old. If you take a look in source 4, Medrash raises two possibilities. Vayi ba'imimehem ba'igdal Moshe. Ben Esrim Shana Haya Moshe Bota Sha'a. Opinion number one is that he was 20 at that moment, as it says, Vayigdal Moshe, grew up, age when he could essentially begin to assert himself independently. Vayeshumim Ben Arba'im, there is an opinion that says that he is 40. There is a third opinion that is quoted by the Ramban, that Vayigdal is what age do we normally consider somebody is growing up? Anybody here bar mitzvah? Pre-bar mitzvah? Just around bar mitzvah? Okay. So that would put them into the category of, what is your name?
Menachem.
Menachem, about your age. Because the Ramban argues in source 5, Hine nachon ki ben 12 shana. That Vayigdal means that he was 12. Kashir is kiru rabbatein. Al kol panim lo agil le'esrim. At least, at the latest, the oldest possibly would be 20. So essentially the Ramban and the Medrash suggest that when the moment of Moshe emerges from the palace and goes out to look at his brethren and to see their plight and to feel their pain, he's either 12 or he's 20, maybe even as old as 40. But that's about it. The sequence of events that happens after that first day he smites the Egyptian, second day he challenges the Israelite. By that point he realizes that the game is up, and he flees. Forget everything we learned in the movies, he runs. And when he runs where? He runs to Midian. And the Pasuk says, actually this Pasuk you don't have on the source page, but he runs to Midian, Vayivrach Moshe mipnei Paro, Moshe runs before Paro, Vayeshev be'eretz Midian, and he settles in the land of Midian, Vayeshev al ha-be'er. So he comes to Midian. And he comes to Midian immediately after having killed the Egyptian, fleeing for his life. Which means that how old is he when he gets to Midian? 12, 20, or 40, ostensibly. And those are our options right now on the table. 12, 20, or 40. Let's work off of the three. Let's work off the... I'm going to park 12 for a... You'll excuse me for a moment, Menachem, but I'm going to park 12 for a moment and work off either 20 or 40. Let's assume 20. It's the kind of most extreme case. Comes to Midian at the age of 20, and he saves the daughters of Yitro, and he marries Tzipporah, and what else does he do while he's there in Midian? And he has two boys, Gershom and Eliezer, and he comes to, and he shepherds his father-in-law's flock, and as the time goes on, he stands before God at the burning bush at the age of 80 and now has to go back to Mitzrayim. Which means that for how long does he sojourn in Midian? Somewhere between 40 and 60 years. And at what point does he have Gershom and Eliezer? Two boys are born. At what point in his life in Midian? Because when he's on his way back to Mitzrayim, if you remember the story in the beginning of Parshat Shemot, one of them is caught without a bris, and he asks him, Tzipora has to do the bris. So is he? She doing a bris on a 60-year-old? Well, just a question. How old is Eliezer at the time of the bris? If he's a young man, that means that for 60 years they had no children? Assuming for a moment that Tzipora was a young woman when he met her, she's the oldest of the daughters of Yitro, that means that she's having a child at the age of, 70, 80? Almost as old as Sarah. That doesn't work, that's not worthy of some reference of the miracle of childbirth? The mystery is growing. Moshe's 60 years of absence is a mystery, and if you assume that he comes to Midian, and there he has this entire experience with Tzipora and the children and Yitro and the flock and then the burning bush, and suddenly he appears on the scene in Mitzrayim and he's 80, I'm dealing with a very big gap in Moshe's life, what we would call the missing years. And in fact, that's what the Mefarshim struggle with, because the story of Moshe's return to Mitzrayim, which is in Source 6, Moshe is in Midian, and the beginning of the story of the burning bush, where we hear of God's intervention, God sees hears their cry, sees their plight, etc. We quote at the Haggadah as well. Begins with the description of Vayi Bayamim HaRabim HaHem, in those many years. Why the many years? Because 60 years of Moshe was in Midian. There were many years there. The king of Egypt died. People cried out from their pain. And then God comes to Moshe after those many years and he says, okay, it's time for you to go back to Mitzrayim. 60 years. Minimally 40. Possibly even as many as 60. And the Mefarshim are all united in this point that, and there's some that are, I'll just share with you briefly that aren't on the page, but essentially Rashi, in those many days, Shaya Moshe gar b'Midian. In those days that Moshe was living in Midian. Or Lachar Sharag Moshe Tamitri Bikesh Paro Melech Mitzrayim Lavokat Moshe Ba'ivrach Mipanav. Moshe killed the Mitzri and he ran. Paro wanted to kill him. Until now, he was 80 years when God spoke with him. If you take a look at the Sforna, source 10, come back to the Ramban in a moment. Take a look at the Sforna. Actually, the Ramban himself makes this point as well in source 7. I'll start with that, second paragraph. Second paragraph. These many days, yamim rabim, refer to the days in which Moshe had fled from Paro. He ran when he was young, as it says, "Vayigdal Moshe." Skip a little bit. He was 12, or at most 40. Most 20. And when he stood before Paro, he was 80. So all of those years are bayamim harabim hayim, those many days. But of course, it doesn't solve our mystery. Our mystery is that in those 60 years to be in Midian and to be in Midian and to marry Tzipora and to have children and then to return to Egypt at the age of 80 leaves us with the question of A, the age of Moshe's children, which is a mystery, and the gap, if you will, of what happened to Moshe in those 60 years. He just disappeared, kind of into the framework or fabric of Midian life, and suddenly reappears. So, to begin to explore this mystery, and to begin to suggest that we're dealing with a missing chapter in Moshe's life, the Medrash typically is averse to leaving major gaps in the story untold. And so we find ourselves a fascinating Midrash that Rishonim question its authenticity, but ultimately, as you can see it, it addresses this question. What happened to Moshe if he came to Midian right away? He's 60 years in Midian, and Gershon and Eliezer are born right away, then they're older men, or older, right? When they're having a bris on the way back to Mitzrayim, and if they're born later, that means that Tzipora is giving birth at the age of 8. Either way, I have a mystery. So I'll share with you the story of Moshe in the missing years, at least as it's told by the Midrash. And then we'll come back to the question of, is there a non-Midrashic approach to resolve the same question? But if you take a look at source 11 is the text. It's a reference to a Midrash, which is somewhat apocryphal. It's referred to as Divrei HaYamim LeMoshe Rabbeinu, Chronicles of Moshe's Life. It appears in a collection of Midrashim called the Otzar HaMidrashim. And there we find the following account. So I'm reading in source 11. I'm going to read parts of it and translate as we go. This is referring to the kingdom of Ethiopia. Now, just a quick reference to Ethiopian Tanakh. Ethiopian Tanakh is not what we refer to as Ethiopia today. Essentially, in Tanakh terminology, the the continent of Africa is divided into two parts. The northern part of the continent is referred to as Mitzrayim, and the southern part of the continent, more or less, is along the lines of the Nile, is referred to as Kush. And so it's a much larger space, but essentially there are only two geographic regions in Africa that are identified by name in Tanakh. One is Mitzrayim and the other is Kush. So ויחדלו מלחם על כוש ויצורו עליה תשע שנים. There is a description of a great war that was involved with Kush for 9 years, a kind of a siege war. אין יוצא ואין בא. ויהי ביות המצור על כוש, as this siege of Kush took place, ברח משה ממצרים. At that time, that Moshe was fleeing from Egypt, there was this siege of the capital or the main city of Kush. And Moshe found himself fleeing into the army of Nikanus, king of Ethiopia. Moshe ben 30 shana bevo'o al machane, Nikanus hatzarim al Kush. And he comes to this king at the age of 30. Again, in his flight from Egypt, he's a young man, probably in the age of, in and around 30, and he comes to Ethiopia. Moshe ends up being a kind of enters into the army, into the service of this Nikanor Melech Kush. He finds favor in their eyes. They embrace him. They find him very loyal. And he's tall and he's handsome and he's a warrior. And descriptions that are similar to descriptions that we would have used for Shaul Melech Yisrael, Shechmo Hamal Gavon Mikol Adam, Ve'yaveh Melech Ma'od Ve'yisimeo L'sar Tzava. And he works his way up in the echelons of this of his king Nikonus until he establishes himself as the Tzar Tzava. Ve'yeshiv Sham Yamim Rabim, and there he remained for many years. Ad shechala melech Nikanus v'yamot, until the death of the king himself. V'yimru v'adav manaseh, the king died. And the servants now had the question of who to appoint as the heir to this kingdom. Im naleh ha'ir yirdefu acharenu v'yachritu et shmenu, if we attack the city, they'll destroy us, we don't have any leader. Better to die than to return home empty-handed. So they decided, you know what, he's not from within the ranks, he's an outsider, but nonetheless, they're going to appoint Moshe as the new king. There's none like him, tall, warrior, handsome, strong, the Asuken, Baiknulu, the Moshe, Hakvira, Eshet Nikonus. And to seal the deal, give him some royal claim to the royal throne, they gave him as a wife, the widow of King Nikonus. That would place into Moshe's world a wife who is a Isha Kushit. Which is how the Medrash's approach to the question of the Isha Kushit referenced in Sefer Bamidbar, the Medrash says this is the Isha Kushit that, Rashi says it's a reference to Tzipora. The Medrash has a different take on that story. Moshe, of course, is loyal, borrowing from the story of Yosef, loyal to his brit with God, and he does not approach her, doesn't touch her. Places a sword between them, and he will not sin with her. And then the rest of the story talks about how they dealt with the siege, and Moshe decides that it's time to end the siege and attack and win the victory, and so he does. And they are, and essentially it seals his role as the king of this region. I'm going to skip a little bit. The next Medrash also includes the fact that one of the people in the city that was that where the siege was broken and the sort of ended up being vanquished was Bilam ben Beor, and Bilam comes running back to Mitzrayim and tells Paro that the new king of Ethiopia is this guy Moshe, and kind of tells the secret of his story. End of the next paragraph. Vayar Moshe et Hashem Elokav v'lasar mechukot avotav Avraham Yitzhak v'Yaakov alav shalom yamin u'smol yamim Hashem alach Moshe al kush 40 shana. Moshe reigned over Ethiopia for 40 years. So of course the Medrash deals with an extraordinary, our extraordinary challenge. Because if he's in Ethiopia for 40 years and he arrives there at the age of 30, that means he's in Ethiopia from the age of 30 to 70. He doesn't get to Midian, till the next part of the story, until he's 70 years old. And now his entire story in Midian is only 10 years in total. Makes sense. He marries Zipporah and he has two children, and the children are much younger when he returns to Mitzrayim. And I've explained away, if you will, I've explained the gap, or the missing years, in Moshe's life. Similar, so the next paragraph deals with how he ends up eventually leaving Eretz Kush. Hayom, Yosheva Kisova, Gevira Yosheva Tetzlo. This misses Eshet Isha Kushit, the wife of Nikonus, who's now Moshe's wife, who Moshe doesn't have a marital relation with, is upset that their relationship is not to what it should be, and so she tells the locals that that is the case. For 40 years, this king who you appointed has not touched me, and she's not happy about it. And so she wants them to appoint the son of Nikonus or some other heir to the throne. This Moshe is described as an ish nochri, an outsider. And so they, despite all of their love for him, they ask him to leave, and at the end of this paragraph, Vayelech Moshe l'Eretz Midyan v'yeshev al ha'be'er. So Moshe leaves Eretz Kush, and he goes to Midyan. And the rest, as they say, is history, or at least recorded history. The rest of this Medrash actually is a more famous piece because you're all familiar with the story of how Moshe, the Medrash's story about how Moshe found the mateh, the staff, that Yitro had in his garden, the staff in the ground, nobody could remove it, staff from Gan Eden. Familiar with that story, right? That, no? Okay, so let's just do that briefly because that's a fascinating Medrash. Well, Rashi actually, I think, if I remember correctly, quotes it at some point. Just briefly, V'lokehen midyan sheva banot. Moshe comes to Midian. Kohen Midian Yitro has seven daughters. Moshe agrees to stay there. Vayom Moshe l'shevet at ha'ish, etc. Yitro, on the other hand, is initially suspicious of Moshe. According to the Medrash, Yitro is very suspicious of this Moshe who comes from Eretz Kush, and maybe he's a renegade from Mitzrayim. And so Amar Yitro b'libo ze ha'ish shesh shalach yado b'keter ha'melech. Yitro wants to take this Moshe and hand him over to Paro. And so in order to do so, he puts him in jail. And he leaves him in jail for 7 years. And during those 7 years, he commands his people not to feed Moshe any food or drink, essentially to starve him out. However, in the middle of that bold section, Tzipora, his daughter, liked Moshe. And so she used to sneak him food in this jail where he was not allowed to have any food, where he was supposed to be starved, and she would sneak him food and kept him alive that way. And for 7 years this went on. After 7 years, Tzipporah comes running to her father and says, "Listen, is it possible for somebody to survive without food or water for 7 years?" Yitro says, "No. So, well, you've got this guy in your jail for 7 years. You commanded everybody not to feed him for 7 years, and yet he's still alive and well." And Yitro goes running over to the jail a kind of a story reminiscent of Sefer Daniel, opens up the door, and there is Moshe standing there in prayer. Meitra is so impressed that he takes him out of the jail, and he gives him Tzipora as his wife. And so now our age gap has gone from 60 years to 40 years in Midian. He leaves Midian, according to the Medrash, he leaves in Mitzrayim at the age of 30. He comes to Eretz Kush. He's in Eretz Kush as king of Ethiopia for 40 years. 40 years he leaves Eretz Kush because of a conflict with the Shah Kushit. He comes to Midian. For 7 years, Yitro throws him in jail. As he leaves the jail 7 years later, he gives Moshe Tzipora's hand in marriage. At that point, the end of the Medrash is that they find this staff in his garden that Yitro had for all of these years that nobody could pull out of the ground, and the actually before he marries Yitro. In the next bold section of the paragraph, Imimahem tziva Yitro v'shiyavidu kol b'kolot zotav shekol mi shiyavo v'yitlosh hamateh hanatua b'gano shiyiten lo tzora b'ito li'isha. He had a kind of an ongoing statement. Anybody who could pull this sword, this is not the sword, we're not talking about King Arthur, we're talking about the mata. Right? Anybody who could pull this mata out of the ground would be eligible to marry his daughter Yitro. Moshe, nobody could, his daughter Tzipora, nobody could. Moshe goes over, pulls it out of the ground in one fell swoop, and lo and behold, marries Tzipora. End of the paragraph, last end of this medrash, Moshe ben Shivim v'sheva shanim v'tzeito mibet hasoa. He's 77. Now the story, chronologically, makes more sense. Marries Tzipora, they have two children in 3 years, not impossible, and Tzipora is probably much younger, and at the end of the day, Eliezer's bris is on the way back to Mitzrayim. So the Medrash is a fascinating story of Moshe in Ethiopia, Moshe finding the matzah, Moshe in Yitro's house, Moshe, the miracles of the story. But it's also an attempt to resolve a textual mystery. As many Midrashim are, even these stories that sound fanciful, but they are an attempt to address what is a very real problem. Which is that for Moshe to leave Midian, leave Mitzrayim and go to Midian at the age of 20 or 30, and to come back to Mitzrayim at the age of 80, doesn't work given the story of Tzipora and the two children that they have in Eretz Midian. So, if I don't take the Midrashic approach, what do I do with these missing years? In fact, the Ramban, sort of the closest address to this question, suggests the following, in source 12. Ramban makes the argument, a powerful, compelling argument, that Karov ki besof hazman bala Midian. Who said that Moshe came to Midian right away? Moshe left Egypt as a young man. Who says that he arrived in Midian right away? It's possible for him to have kind of journeyed through the wilderness, or journeyed through the desert, and gone from place to place. And then eventually, he comes back to Midian. And that's how he describes the story. We look in the second paragraph. The text records how he left Paro, and he came to Midian. And the main piece of the story are those two anchors. It leaves out all of the pieces in the middle where Moshe journeyed from place to place, in exile to exile, and he was a nomad, and he was a traveler, and he was kind of wandered through the desert, reminiscent maybe of foreshadowing of Bnei Yisrael wandering through the desert for 40 years. Moshe wandered through the desert for 40 years. Shows up in the land in Eretz Midian towards the end of that period of time. And there he marries Tzipora towards the end of that period. In other words, what the Ramban suggests is exactly what the Medrash suggests, with just one difference. The Medrash will fill in that gap with a reference to a story that doesn't have a basis in the text, but it's a fascinating insight altogether. Maybe the Isha Kushit is the one textual reference, that Moshe ended up in Ethiopia as a kind of a leader of the region. But at the end of the day, the question of Moshe's missing years is a very powerful question that needs to be resolved. To suggest, as many of the other Mephoshim do, that Moshe arrives in Midian at the age of 20, marries Zipporah and has two children, and the children are 60 years old when Moshe comes back to Mitzrayim and he gives them a bris at the age of 60, or has no children for 60 years, either of those two possibilities is questionable. Ad kan, up until now, I've shared with you more or less what appears in the class of Mepharshim, the problem of the missing years, the Midrash's approach to address this question, and the Mepharshim's attempt to suggest that there's a missing gap here. There's a gap here, but we can live with it. We take the pasuk Vayivrach Moshe Mipnei Paro Vayavo Be'eretz Vayesha Be'eretz Midian. Moshe left Mitzrayim and he came to Midian. We read that as one sentence. The Ramban says you have to read it with three dots in the middle. Vayivrach Moshe Mipnei Paro. Moshe left, fled from Paro's house. Dot dot dot. 40 years later, shows up in Midian. In the time remaining, what I'd like to suggest to you is an alternative. An alternative that may put a new spin on the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We've made one assumption this entire time. And that assumption is that Moshe is 80 years old when he comes before Paro, as it says at the beginning of Parsha. And he's 80 years old when he stood before God at the burning bush in Parshat Shemot. It says he's 80 when he comes to Paro. It doesn't say anything about how old he is when he stood before God at the burning bush. On top of that, we have this very strange description of two introductions or two missions, repetition of the mandate to go to Mitzrayim that I shared with you at the beginning of this year in the text, the opening chapters of this week's parsha. So what can we do with this that might help us resolve the mystery? Key phrase. Moshe worked through the story, leaving out the question of how old he is at the burning bush. Moshe is told to go to Mitzrayim, comes to Mitzrayim, gathers the elders, comes to Paro's house, stands before Paro, and says, "Let my people go." More or less. "Let my people go that they may serve God in the wilderness." Paro says,
"No."
No. Paro says not only no, but Paro says, "What are you bringing parlor tricks to Mitzrayim for? Obviously, you have more time on your hands than you are than you're letting on. And so if you have more time on your hands, then we'll be happy to fill that time. Let them go and build bricks without straw." In other words, at the end of Parshat Shemot, Moshe's mission to Paro is a failure. Moshe emerges from Paro's palace disappointed, devastated. The people are angry. V'lo Shemuel Moshe mikotzer ruach mi'avodah kasha, refused to listen to Moshe, despite the fact that initially they said v'yaminu Moshe, that they believed Moshe and they believed the mission and they believed the message of Pakot Pakarati. But now at the end of that moment of failure before Paro, v'lo Shemuel Moshe, they did not listen to Moshe mikotzer ruach mi'avodah kasha, because of all of the burden and the challenges. And the Mepharshim suggests that they're building bricks without straw. Who's got time to listen to Moshe tell them stories about how they're going to go to be set free? It's a fascinating comment in the Mechilta. The Mechilta says in Source 16, And after Moshe, sorry, not Torah 16, I apologize. We'll get to that in a moment. It's source 13. Dome dodi letzvi. Ma tzvi hazeh nigle b'chozeh v'nichseh. Reference to Shir HaShirim, to the Redeemer compared to a deer, just as a deer running over the hills, you can see it, and then it runs into the valleys, and you can't see it anymore. Kach go'el ha-rishon, so to the first Redeemer, referring to Moshe, nigle v'nichse, was seen, and then he was hidden. V'brachni v'shem Rabbi Levi omer, go'el ha-rishon kach go'el ha-acharon. Similarly, our future Redeemer will be seen, and then he'll be hidden, and he'll be seen again. Hagoel HaRishon Zeh Moshe, the first Redeemer refers to Moshe. Nigla Lehem appeared to the people, V'chazah V'nichsa, and then he was disappeared. Kama Nichsa Mehem, how long did he disappear? V'tenchum HaMer, Shlosha Chodashim, 3 months. For 3 months, says the Medrash, Moshe goes back to Midian. Disillusioned, disheartened, upset, Moshe goes back to Midian. I want to make an assumption. It's a bit of a stretch, but I think I can defend it. We take the position of the Medrash. We make one slight change. Instead of going back to Midian for 3 months, we can assume he was back to Midian for 30 years. In other words, what I would like to suggest is that Moshe had two separate missions to Mitzrayim. First encountered this idea in a shir of my Rebbe Rav Midan. It's a fascinating suggestion that Moshe's mission to Paro at the first go-around is not 3 months or 3 weeks before the beginning of Parshat Va'era, but 30 years. Why do I say 30 years? I'll show you in a moment. Let's first understand what that means. They didn't listen to Moshe because of a challenging hard work and labor. The Mefarshim suggests that they're not listening to Moshe means that they were too busy and burdened and short of breath to kind of pay attention to what Moshe had to say. Mechilta, on the other hand, suggests something else entirely. That they refused to listen to Moshe because Moshe was asking them not just to follow him into freedom, but to follow him into the servitude of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you look at the Bessei, well, we're now reading Source 16. They didn't listen to Moshe. You bring somebody who's a slave for so many years, so many generations, and you tell them the Redeemer has come. Why wouldn't they listen to Moshe? Why wouldn't they hope and expect? I'll skip a line or two. The real issue was they didn't want to give up their idolatry. They didn't want to give up their religious practices. They didn't want to give up their cultural practices. They didn't want to change their way of life. And the Mechilta quotes a pasuk. Shenemar, V'amar aleim ish yikutze einav yishlichu b'gulei mitzoyim al titamu, etc., etc. Sukim in Perek and Yechezkel, I'm going to share with you in a moment. despite the fact that Moshe instructed them, God's instruction to Moshe and Aaron was to command Bnei Yisrael, that instruction wasn't just to go to Egypt, wasn't just about leaving Mitzrayim, it was about recognizing that they were entering into the servitude of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not so fast. Leave Egypt? Yes. Enter into the service of God? Not so fast. And so the Medrash says because they refused to abandon this process of idolatry, Lo Shemu O Moshe. If I combine these two moments, it gives me an explanation, a context of why they were not listening to Moshe. And gives me the context of the Medrash that says that Moshe, disillusioned, leaves, is hidden from them for 3 months, or maybe for 30 years, maybe for the length of time of an entire generation. I have a resolution to the question of what happened to them in those missing years. A little different than the story of the Medrash. But I also have something that begins to build a story. And it's a very powerful story, and with a very powerful message. If you turn to the last page, to this quote that the Medrash references, which is a quote from Sefer Yechezkel. Very often we find that Torah is sometimes sparse in its details in one location and greater and more detailed and more elaborate in a different location. One of the things that learn in the context of the study of Tanakh is that we are Sefer HaSfarim, the Book of Books is called Sefer HaSfarim because it's not just one. It's not just 24 different books, but in fact, all of Tanakh is really one collection, it's one story. And so very often we need parts of one part of Tanakh in order to shed light on another. And this is a classic example. If we look at the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, as described by the Navi Yechezkel, two pieces of information emerge from this passage that shed light on our story. Yechezkel is describing, on the day that I chose Israel, I wanted to take him out of Egypt. I revealed myself to the children of Yaakov in the land of Mitzrayim. And I lifted my hand to them and I said to them, Ani Hashem. You know what passage begins with the phrase Ani Hashem? This week's parasha, the Dalad L'Shanot HaGeula, after which it says V'lo Shemu Moshe Mikotzer Ruach Mi'Avodah Kasha, that they didn't listen to Moshe. Bayom Ahu, says the Medrash, on that day Nesati Adi L'Motziyam Eretz Mitzrayim, I wanted to take him out of Egypt to the land that I promised, the land of flowing with milk and honey, Eretz Shetai to Lem Zavat Chalav Dvash. Tzvihi l'chol haratzot, most desirable of all lands. I only had one request. One prerequisite. Romar alehem, ish yikud zeinav hashlichu, uvi gilulei mitzrayim al titamau. Throw away the idols. Throw away the idolatry. Throw away the impurity. Ani Hashem elokechem. And the response of the people? In the parasha it is, lo shemu Moshe. In the Mechilta it says that they refused to give up the idolatry. In the Cheskel it says, Vayomruvi, they rebelled against me. V'lo avu lishmo elai, they refused to listen to me. They did not throw away their idols, they did not throw away their abominations. The Omar, and therefore I said, they deserve to be destroyed in the land of Egypt. And I wanted to destroy them. Idolatry? But I didn't. You know why I didn't? Ask Leman Shemi, for the sake of my great name. Because of the great Chilul Hashem that it would have created if I had taken God's people and destroyed them. in the eyes of all the Egyptians. How many times does Moshe say to God, when God threatens to destroy Israel, Ma'ayom Mitzrayim, what will the Egyptians say? It's an argument that Yechezkel repeats here. We can't destroy Israel because Ma'ayom Mitzrayim. So you know what? In the end, Ma'ayom Mitzrayim, I took them out of Egypt. And I brought them into the Midbar. And I gave them my laws, and I gave them my statutes, and I made my Shabbos known to them. And I gave them the Aseret HaDibrot. Vayomrubi, and again they rebelled against me. Ki Beit Yisrael, Vayomrubi Beit Yisrael Bamidbar. And they didn't listen to my laws, and they didn't listen to my statutes. Vayaseh leman shemi levoti echel enei avoyim asher otzi. Am min Mitzrayim. And again, I wanted, sorry, I skipped the pasuk. Pasuk Yud Gimel. I wanted to destroy them, but for my sake of my name, I did not. So what did I do? So I left them in the Midbar for 40 years. In other words, the Medrash links two moments. The moment that they, Yechezkel, links two moments. The moment in Mitzrayim, when the people refused to give up their idols, and God threatened to destroy them in Egypt, and Moshe said, you can't destroy them, Mayamu Mitzrayim. And so God let them live in Mitzrayim and took them out of Egypt. Point one. Point two, in the Midbar, again they rebelled. Chayta Ega, Chayta Maraglim. Again God wanted to destroy them. And again Moshe interceded on their behalf, and again God said, fine, I won't destroy them. What did he do instead? Left them alive to wander in the desert for 40 years. In other words, the gzeirah was, they won't be destroyed, but neither will they be redeemed. We have to wait a generation. The link between these two may just be the resolution of our mystery. That maybe in Egypt, God said the same thing. Moshe came to Paro. Moshe came to the people. Moshe came to the elders and said to them, it all hinges on one thing. You have to get rid of the idols. And they said no. In disillusion, Moshe goes back to Midian. And disillusion, Moshe argues against the destruction of Israel, but he turns away from them. And in the end, God says, a generation will have to wait. And we'll have to wait for 30 years. Until 30 years later, Moshe is once again sent back to Mitzrayim in a second mission, which is why the parsha begins with a second mission all over again. Only this is a new generation. Now Moshe is 80 years old. When Moshe came to them the first time, he was 40, 50. He was an equal, he was a contemporary. Now he's from the older generation. Now he's 80. It's a whole different story. It's a whole different conversation. Why do I keep saying 30 years? Because the Ramban, who doesn't quite learn the parsha this way, but he comes close to it as I found in any of the Mepharshim, Ramban uses this text for a fascinating suggestion. You're all familiar with the discrepancy of how many years we spent in Egypt? God said to Abraham, you would spend 400 years. The Medrash shrinks that to 210 years for other reasons. Many of the Mepharshim learn 400 years is 400 years. We spent 400 years in Mitzrayim. But as they're leaving Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says that they spent 430 years in Mitzrayim. So Rashi has his calculation, the Mepharshim of their calculation. You know what Ramban says? Ramban says they were supposed to leave after 400. But they didn't give up their idols. They didn't give up their idolatry. They didn't give up their refusal to follow the path that Moshe had set for them. They abandoned Bris Milah, as the Medrash says. They engaged in idolatry. They engaged in these kinds of activities. And so the Ramban says, Hagzeraita 400 shana, in source 18, the Gzera was 400 years. But Vashloshim Shnaelim Tosefet Nalaim Be'avon Ador Ahuv, the iniquities of that generation got, okay, we'll delay 30 years. Those are the 30 years I think Moshe went back to Midian. And so Gershon and Eliezer are born in the initial mission, a young child. And Moshe comes to power in the initial mission. And there he has the story with the Bris Milah. And he comes to Mitzrayim. And there he encounters the challenge of the recalcitrance of the people to do what they need to do to emerge into a redeemed world. And so he has to go back to Midian, and he has to wait for another generation. And Moshe will go back, and he will take him out of Egypt. But it's a different opportunity, it's a different generation. It's delayed, it's challenged, it's full of different kinds of challenges that weren't there, or that may not have been there, if the people listened to Moshe the first time. It's a disappointing story. But at the same time, it's a story that challenges us. Because we live with a constant reminder. We live in a world today to which we ascribe the phrase Reshit Tzimchat Gaulatenu. We live in a world today to which we ascribe the redemption of Israel. The process by which we return to the land of Israel, which we're building the state of Israel, which we're building Malchut Yisrael, which we are rebuilding the army of Israel. Ashrei shezachinu l'chach. And that's a special schus, a special bracha. But how many times in the course of the contemporary story of Israel have we heard the notion that the third redemption is a final redemption, and once it starts, it cannot stop. And that we are on a one-way trajectory. And it frightens me, because I'm not sure that it's true. Yes, we have Midrashim, like Source 19, that says, Shlishi Ein Lahefsek, that the third redemption is a one-way trajectory, will never stop, but at the same time, we have the description of what happened in Mitzrayim. With setbacks, with a Redeemer that is visible and then hidden because the people refused to do what they needed to do in order to bring the redemption about. And so the challenge of the story of Moshe's encounter with Israel and the people's refusal and the need, therefore, to delay the entire story by a generation with all that that entails is a reminder, it's a musar, it's a kind of a frightening reminder, but also a challenging one. We have to read the story of contemporary history correctly. And that as Soloveitchik describes so powerfully and so poignantly in Kol Dodi Dafek, the knocking on the wall, the knocking on the door, the handwriting on the wall, to borrow another biblical metaphor, is so palpable, is so real. We have to understand it, we have to jump at that opportunity, we have to see the challenge to our generation and not miss those opportunities and not take it for granted. And so I will conclude here with the understanding that what we have looked at is a chronological mystery. But into that chronological mystery, the Medrash has poured one of the more famous stories of Moshe in the missing years in Ethiopia. And what we have suggested as an alternative reading is that those missing years were generated by our missing of that first opportunity of that redemption, by not jumping and not recognizing the call of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yishit Shikotzei Mitzrayim Tashlichu. And to hear that call and to answer the mandate of Pakod Pakadati Etchem, I've come to redeem you. But the answer of Amen came to you also. Thus, I have 2 minutes according to the clock. I'd be happy to take questions. Yes?
Why does he have have to be in Ethiopia? Why does that, it's not necessary for the story to make sense.
I'm not suggesting that he is. I'm suggesting that that's the Medrash's approach to this mystery.
And it helps you with the years.
Right. And the Mefarshim struggle with this question with an answer that is not based on the story of Ethiopia. Essentially, what I painted is three options. Either he ends up in some other place till he gets to Mitzrayim, or he's in Midian for 40, 50 years, or, but there's two parts of the story. He's a young man at the Sne, he's a young man in his first mission back, but he's a much older man at the beginning of this week's parasha, because the first mission was set back in time.
I
want to
thank you so much, Rabbi Shulman.
Pleasure.
This was really excellent, so interesting, thought-provoking. There might be more questions, but there's another shiur in here starting momentarily. So if it's okay to maybe
sure.
go a little
Absolutely.
Bit outside and continue the conversation there.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.